Imagine for a moment that you are sitting next to Jesus on the Mount of Olives. The sun is going down, the view of Jerusalem is beautiful, and suddenly the teacher tells you something that makes your blood run cold. It is not a pretty parable, it is not a gentle teaching, it is a military warning, an evacuation order straight from heaven. What could be so dangerous, so demonic, that the Son of God himself would say, "Don't even stay to get your coat, just flee"? We're talking about the same Jesus who fought demons, calmed storms, and raised the dead. What would make him say run? The answer is in Matthew, chapter 24, verse 15. Therefore when you see standing in the holy place, the abomination that causes desolation, spoken of through the prophet Daniel, let the reader understand. Then let those in Judea flee to the mountains. Quote. Notice that Jesus didn't say when they might see or if it would happen. He said, when you see, it's a certainty, not a possibility. It's a prophetic event that will happen, and when it does, there will be no time for doubt or theological debate. This is no ordinary prophecy. It's the sign that will mark the beginning of the Great Tribulation, the darkest period that humanity has ever experienced. And the most disturbing thing is that many Christians may be celebrating the very event that Jesus warned us to avoid. Because when we see the abomination of desolation, it won't be something hidden in a corner. It will be something that the whole world will be watching, cheering, celebrating. The media will be talking about peace, unity, a new dawn for humanity. But the Bible tells us it will be the exact opposite. That's why we need to understand what exactly the abomination of desolation is, when it happened before, and why Jesus was so specific in telling us that when we see it, we should not pray, we should not wait, we should not hesitate, we should just run, because what comes next will be so terrible that it would be better to be far away when it begins. This warning wasn't just for the disciples 2,000 years ago. It was for us too, for the generation that will see this prophecy fulfilled for the second time in history. And brothers, I have a strong suspicion that we are that generation. In the coming chapters, we're going to unravel exactly what Jesus saw that day on the Mount of Olives that caused him to give such a desperate warning. We're going to understand why he used the word run and not pray. And we're going to look at the signs that indicate this prophetic moment may be closer than we think. Brace yourselves, because what you're about to hear could completely change your perspective on the end times and the urgency of being spiritually prepared for what's coming. I want you to imagine that moment in history. Jesus is sitting on the Mount of Olives and his disciples approach him with a question that all of us have asked ourselves at some point. When will these things be? And what will be the sign of your coming and of the end of the age? It was a natural question. Had they seen Jesus predict the destruction of the temple, that magnificent temple that had been the pride of Israel for generations? The disciples wanted to know when and how all this would happen, but Jesus' answer went far beyond what they expected. He not only told them about the destruction of the temple that they would see in their generation, but he gave them a sign for a future event that would be even more devastating. Jesus looked out over the valley, toward that city that he loved so much, toward that temple where he had taught so many times, and he saw something that caused him to speak with an urgency that had rarely been heard in his voice. When you see standing in the holy place the abomination that makes desolate, spoken of by the prophet Daniel, notice that Jesus did not invent this concept. He took it directly from the prophet Daniel, connecting an Old Testament prophecy with a future event that his disciples would see. Daniel had prophesied about this in chapter 11, verse 31. And troops will be raised from them and will defile the sanctuary and the fortress, and they will take away the daily sacrifices and set up the abomination that makes desolate. But here's the fascinating thing. Jesus knew that Daniel was speaking of something that had already partially happened with Antiochus Epiphanes, but he also knew that there would be a future fulfillment that was far more terrible, far more definitive. That's why his warning was so specific and so urgent. Then let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. Let him who is on the housetop not come down to take anything out of his house. And let him who is in the field not go back to take his cloak. Do you see what Jesus is saying here? He is talking about an emergency evacuation, like when there is a fire in a building and the alarm goes off and everyone is to get out immediately without stopping to gather their belongings. Jesus was seeing something in the future, something so dangerous, so destructive, that the only proper response would be to flee immediately, not to stand and watch, not to try to resist, not to try to fight, just to run. And then he added something that gives me chills every time I read it, because then there will be great tribulation, such as has not been since the beginning of the world until this time, nor ever will be. Brothers and sisters, Jesus was talking about the most terrible period in all of human history. More terrible than the flood, more terrible than the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah, more terrible than any war or disaster that we have ever seen. And the sign that this period is beginning will be the abomination of desolation in the holy place. That's why we need to understand exactly what this is, because when it happens, it will be our signal to act. Jesus didn't leave us in the dark about this. He gave us clear signs, specific warnings, and a definite plan of action. The question is, will we be paying attention when the time comes, or will we be so distracted by the things of this world that we won't recognize the sign when it appears before us? Now let's get to the heart of the matter. What exactly is the abomination of desolation? Because if we're going to recognize it when it appears, we need to understand what we're looking for. The word abomination in Hebrew is shikets, and it refers to something that is completely repugnant to God, something that violates His holiness in the most egregious way possible. It's not simply something bad or wrong, it's something that provokes divine disgust. The word desolate comes from shamam, which means to cause horror, devastation, to turn something into a spiritual desert. Together these words describe something that not only offends God, but brings complete destruction. Daniel gives us more details in chapter 9, verse 27. And he will confirm the covenant with many for 1 week. In the middle of the week he will cause sacrifice and offering to cease. Then the one who makes desolate will come with the multitude of abominations. Do you see the pattern? Here first there is a covenant, a prophetic week of 7 years. In the middle of that week, someone causes sacrifice to cease and then comes the abomination that causes desolation. This is not just something symbolic or spiritual, it is something physical, literal, that happens in a specific place, the holy place, the temple. Someone enters the most sacred place and does something so horrible that it defiles the entire sanctuary. In 2 Thessalonians, chapter 2, verse 4, Paul gives us even more details. Who opposes and exalts himself above all that is called God or that is worshipped, so that he sits in the temple of God as God, showing himself that he is God. Here's the key. The abomination of desolation is not simply a statue or an idol that someone sets up in the temple. It's a person, the Antichrist, who enters the most holy place and declares that he is God. Imagine the blasphemy, the place where only the high priest could enter once a year, where the presence of God dwells, being desecrated by someone claiming to be God himself. But here's what troubles me. This man is not coming with horns and a tail. He's not coming as the bad guy. He's coming as a peacemaker, as someone who brings solutions to the world's problems. Daniel chapter 8 verse 25 tells us, by his shrewdness he will cause deceit to prosper in his hand and he will magnify himself in his heart and will destroy many without warning. The Antichrist will be charismatic, intelligent and will have solutions to the world's economic, political and social problems. That is why many will willingly follow him. That is why many Christians may even celebrate his rise to power. But when he enters the temple and declares himself God, when he commits that abomination of desolation, his true nature will be exposed and by then it will be too late for many. That is why Jesus was so emphatic in his warning. When we see this happen, there is no time for analysis, there is no time for theological debates, there is no time to see what the religious leaders say. There is only time to obey the direct command of the Lord, to run. Because what comes after the abomination of desolation will be a time of persecution and tribulation, such as has never existed in the history of humanity. and those who are left trying to understand what is happening may not survive to tell about it. For to fully understand what Jesus warned us was coming, we need to look back to the year 167 BC, when something happened that chilled the blood of the Jewish people and seared it into their collective memory forever. His name was Antius Epiphanes, and he was the king of the Seleucid Empire. But he was no ordinary king. He was a man possessed by an irrational hatred of the God of Israel and everything Judaism stood for. Antius was not content with simply conquering Israel militarily. He had a more sinister mission: to destroy the faith of the Jewish people from within, to force them to abandon their God and worship the Greek gods. One day this man made a decision that shook the ancient world. He marched on Jerusalem with his armies. But his target was not the royal palace or the city walls. His target was the temple, the house of God. Imagine the horror of the priests when they saw pagan soldiers entering the holy place. Imagine the terror of the people when they realized what was about to happen. Antius walked to the altar where for generations sacrifices had been offered to the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And there, in that sacred place, he did something unthinkable. He sacrificed a pig. To us today, this may seem strange, but to the Jews of that time, it was the most horrible desecration imaginable. The pig was an unclean animal according to the law of Moses. To offer it as a sacrifice on the altar of God was like spitting in the face of the Most High. But Antiochus did not stop there. He built an altar to Zeus, the Greek god, inside the temple itself. He turned the house of God into a pagan temple. He transformed the place of worship into a center of idolatry. The consequences were immediate and brutal. Anyone caught observing the Sabbath was put to death. Anyone who circumcised their son was murdered. Copies of the scriptures were burned in the streets. The persecution was so intense that many Jews thought it was the end of the world. The prophet Daniel had prophesied about this, but living it was another thing entirely. For 3 years and 20 years, the Jews were forced to flee. In the middle, the temple was desecrated. For 3.5 years, the daily sacrifices ceased. For 3.5 years, it seemed that God had abandoned his people. But here's the part that gives me the chills. Jesus, when he spoke of the abomination of desolation, he wasn't just talking about what Antiochus had done, he was talking about something that would make Antiochus's performance look like a minor rehearsal. Daniel, chapter 11, verse 31, prophesied about Antiochus, but Daniel also looked further into the future. He saw someone who would make Antiochus look like an amateur by comparison. That's why Jesus was able to use Daniel's prophecy to speak of both the past and the future. What Antiochus did was horrible, but it was just a shadow, just a foreshadowing of what was to come. The difference is that when the future Antichrist performs his abomination of desolation, it won't be just in Jerusalem. Its effects will be felt worldwide. It won't last just 3.5 years of local persecution, it will last 3.5 years of global tribulation. And that's why Jesus gave us such an urgent warning, because if what happened to Antiochus was so terrible that it almost destroyed the Jewish faith, what's coming will be so devastating that it will threaten the faith of the entire church worldwide. This is where things get really disturbing, brothers and sisters, because what happened to Antiochus Epiphanes was not the final fulfillment of Daniel's prophecy. It was just the first act of a play that will have a second, much more terrible performance. Jesus stood on the Mount of Olives, over 150 years after Antiochus, and looked into the future and saw that the abomination of desolation would happen again. But this time it wouldn't be a rehearsal, it would be the main performance. How can we be sure of this? Because Jesus connected the abomination of desolation with the Great Tribulation. And we know that the Great Tribulation hasn't happened yet. Never in history has there been a time of suffering as intense as the one Jesus described. In Matthew chapter 24, verse 21, Jesus said, "For then shall come the end of the world, great tribulation, such as has not been since the beginning of the world until this time, no, nor ever will be." Brothers, not even the horrors of the 20th century, with its world wars and genocides, have reached the level of what Jesus described. What is coming will be worse than all we have seen combined. Daniel, chapter 12, verse 1, gives us more detail. At that time Michael will stand up, the great prince who stands for the sons of your people, and there will be a time of trouble, such as has not been since there was a nation until that same time. You see the pattern. Both Jesus and Daniel speak of a time of trouble unprecedented in human history, and both connect it with the abomination of desolation. But here's what keeps me up at night. The prophecies are not just repeated, they are intensified. What Antiochus did on a local level, the future Antichrist will do on a global level. Revelation, chapter 13, verse 8, tells us, "And all who dwell on the earth will worship him, everyone whose name is not written in the book of life of the Lamb slain from the foundation of the world." Do you realize what this means? When the Antichrist commits his abomination of desolation, when he declares himself God in the temple, it won't just be Israel who worships him, it will be the entire world. Modern technology will make it possible for the entire planet to watch this event in real time. Social media will amplify his message. The media will present him as the solution to all of humanity's problems. And here's the most terrifying part. Many Christians may be among those who applaud him, because they won't recognize what they're seeing. 2 Thessalonians, chapter 2, verse 11, warns us, "For this reason God sends them a powerful delusion so that they will believe a lie." The deception will be so sophisticated, so convincing, that even the elect would be in danger of being deceived if it were possible. Quote, "That's why Jesus gave us specific signs, clear warnings. The abomination of desolation will be our red line, our point of no return. When we see it, we will know, without a doubt, that the final 3.5 years before Christ returns have begun." And that's why there's such urgency in Jesus' words, because once this period begins, each day that passes will be more dangerous than the last. Each week that passes will bring new persecutions, new horrors. Those who wait to act, those who hesitate, those who think they may have misunderstood, may not get a second chance to escape. That's why Jesus didn't say, "Pray for wisdom or consult with your pastors." He said, "Run, because when that moment comes there will be no time for anything else." Brothers, this is where prophecy meets current reality in a way that gives me chills. Because in order for the abomination of desolation to be fulfilled, there needs to be a temple in Jerusalem. And right now, as we speak, that temple is being prepared. Some will say to me, "But Rodrigo, there's no temple in Jerusalem. The Romans destroyed it in 70 AD, and they are right, but the Bible is clear that there will be a third temple and preparations are already underway to build it. In Jerusalem, there is an organization called the Temple Institute. They are not dreaming about rebuilding the temple. They are actively working to make it happen. They have recreated all the sacred utensils according to biblical specifications. They have trained a new generation of Levitical priests. They have raised pure red unblemished cows, needed for ritual purification. According to Numbers, chapter 19, they have designed architectural plans based on biblical descriptions. All they need is permission to build. And, brothers, when that permission comes, the prophetic clock will not only start to tick, it will start to run. Daniel, chapter 9, verse 27, tells us of a prophetic week, 7 years, where someone will confirm the covenant with many. This covenant will allow for the rebuilding of the temple and the restoration of sacrifices. At first, the world will celebrate. The media will talk about a new era of peace in the Middle East. The religious leaders will say it is the fulfillment of God's promises. Politicians will talk about a historic diplomatic achievement, but halfway through those 7 years, 3.5 years in, something will happen that will change everything. The same man who made the temple possible, who brought peace, who seemed to be the answer to the world's prayers, will walk into the Holy of Holies and there, in that sacred place, will commit the abomination of desolation. He will sit in the temple of God, declaring that he is God. 2 Thessalonians, chapter 2, verse 4, describes exactly this. Who opposes and exalts himself above all that is called God or is worshipped, so much so that he sits in the temple of God as God, showing himself that he is God. Do you see what this means? The very man that the world will worship as a peacemaker, as a problem solver, will be the one who commits the greatest blasphemy in human history. And here's the terrifying thing. Most of the world will not see this as blasphemy, but they will see it as a revelation. They will think that God has finally manifested himself on earth. Revelation, chapter 13, verse 4, says, "And they worshiped the dragon who gave authority to the beast. And they worshiped the beast, saying, Who is like the beast? Who is able to make war against him?" Humanity will willingly worship the Antichrist because they will think that he is the answer to all their problems. And when he enters the temple and declares himself to be God, they will see it as the confirmation of what they already believe. But those of us who know the scriptures, those of us who have studied the prophecies, will know exactly what is happening. And that will be our signal to act, not to stand by and resist, not to try to convince others, not to form a resistance movement, but to obey the direct command of Jesus, to run. Because once the Antichrist declares himself to be God in the temple, the most intense persecution the church has ever seen will begin. And those who stay, those who hesitate, those who think they can hold out a little longer, may not survive to tell the tale. The temple is being prepared. The players are taking their positions. The prophetic countdown may have already begun. The question is, will we be ready when the time comes? Picture this moment with me. Jerusalem is in celebration. The streets are filled with pilgrims from all over the world. Sacrifices have returned to the temple after nearly 2,000 years. Worship music fills the air. It's as if heaven has touched earth. But then something changes. A man walks toward the temple. He is not a priest, but no one stops him. His presence commands respect, even reverence. The guards step aside, the crowds make way. This is the man who brought peace to the Middle East, the one who solved the global economic crisis, the one who united religions in a common cause, the one the world looks to as its savior. He walks confidently into the Holy of Holies, that place where only the high priest could enter once a year. But he doesn't come in humility, he comes with authority. He comes to take what he rightfully considers his. And then it happens, in that moment that will split history in two, he sits in the place where only God should be, he raises his voice and speaks the words that will send chills down the spines of eternity. I am God. The cameras are live. Satellites beam his image around the world. Social media explodes with the news. In seconds, all of humanity bears witness to the greatest blasphemy ever committed. But here's the terrifying thing. Most don't see it as blasphemy, they see it as revelation. Television commentators speak of a historic moment. Religious leaders say God has finally made himself known. Crowds begin to worship. Revelation, chapter 13, verse 15, tells us, "And he was given power to give life to the image of the beast, that it should speak and cause as many as would not worship it to be killed." Do you see what this means? He not only declares himself to be God, but he demands worship, and those who refuse to worship him will be put to death. 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, verse 9, warns us, "The coming of the Lord is according to the working of Satan with all power and signs and lying wonders." This man doesn't come with just words, he comes with supernatural power. He performs miracles that confirm his claim to be God. He heals the sick, raises the dead, controls the weather. His power is real, but its source is satanic. And therein lies the perfect deception. The world will look at the miracles and think they confirm his divinity. But those of us who know the scriptures will know that these are lying signs, demonic power masquerading as divinity. At that moment, when we see the Antichrist sit in the temple and declare himself to be God, we know that the final 3.5 years have begun before Christ returns. We know that the Great Tribulation has officially begun, and it is at that exact moment that we must remember the words of Jesus. When you see the abomination that makes you desolate standing in the holy place, then let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. There is no time to pack their bags. There is no time to warn their neighbors. There is no time to close their bank accounts. There is only time to obey the direct command of the Lord. Because what is coming next will be so terrible that Jesus said that unless those days were shortened, no flesh would be saved. But for the sake of the elect, those days will be shortened. Those who recognize the sign and obey Jesus' warning will have an opportunity to escape. But those who doubt, those who wait, those who think they can hold on a little longer, may find themselves trapped in the beast system with no way of escape. The abomination of desolation is not just a prophecy, it is a warning signal straight from heaven. And when that alarm sounds, there will be only one correct response: to run to the safety that God has prepared for His own. Brothers and sisters, what happens after the abomination of desolation is something that should make anyone who understands the implications tremble. Because once the Antichrist declares himself God in the temple, he is not going to sit there waiting for worship. He is going to activate a system of total control that humanity has never experienced. Revelation, chapter 13, verses 16 and 17, gives us the chilling details. He was causing all, small and great, rich and poor, free and slave, to receive a mark on their right hand or on their foreheads. And no one could buy or sell except one who had the mark or the name of the beast, or the number of his name. You see what this means. This is not just religious persecution, this is total economic control. If you don't have the mark of the beast, you can't buy food, you can't pay rent, you can't buy medicine, you can't survive in society. But here's the most terrifying thing. The technology to implement this system already exists. We have biometric identification, digital currencies, social credit systems, GPS tracking. Everything needed to fully control the population is already in place in different parts of the world. When the Antichrist activates this system, it won't be something new that he has to invent. It will be something that already exists, but it will expand globally and become mandatory, and the justification will be perfect. Security, efficiency, world peace. How many times have we heard these justifications already? It's for your safety. It's to prevent terrorism. It's to eliminate fraud. It's to create a more just society. Every crisis creates an opportunity for more control, and the world willingly accepts it. Revelation chapter 13 verse 8 tells us something that gives me the chills. And all the inhabitants of the earth shall worship him, whose names are not written in the Lamb's Book of Life. The majority of humanity will willingly worship the Antichrist. It won't be something that's initially forced upon them. It will be something that people will want to do because they see the immediate benefits. Think about it. A world leader who brings peace to the Middle East, who solves the economic crisis, who unites religions, who performs miracles. Why not worship him? Why not accept his system if it makes life easier and safer? But here's the catch. Once you accept the mark, once you buy into the system, there's no going back. Revelation chapter 14 verses 9 and 10 gives us a terrifying warning. If anyone worships the beast and his image and receives his mark on his forehead or on his hand, he too will drink the wine of the wrath of God. This is not a neutral decision. This is not just a convenient identification. This is a spiritual choice with eternal consequences, and once you make it, it's sealed forever. That's why Jesus warned us to run when we see the abomination of desolation, because once the system is fully activated, it will be nearly impossible to survive outside of it. Those who wait too long may find themselves with only two choices: take the mark or die. But God will not leave us without hope. Revelation chapter 12 verse 14 tells us, "The woman was given two wings of a great eagle, so that she might fly into the wilderness, to her place, where she is nourished for a time and times and half a time, from the serpent." God has a place prepared in the wilderness for those who flee when they see the sign, a place where they will be supernaturally protected and sustained during the 3.5 years of the Great Tribulation. But only those who recognize the sign and heed Jesus' warning will reach that place of safety. Those who hesitate, those who wait, those who think they can handle the situation on their own, may miss out on God's opportunity for escape. The beast system is taking shape before our eyes. The technology is ready. The legal precedents are being set, the public mindset is being prepared. All that is missing is the final activation, and that will come immediately after the abomination of desolation. Brothers and sisters, we have come to the most critical moment in our study because everything we have seen so far brings us to a fundamental question. How will we recognize the exact moment when we are to run? Jesus gave us specific signs, not so that we would be confused, but so that we would know exactly when to act. And when those signs appear, there will be no time for doubt or for consulting with others, there will only be time for obedience. Matthew chapter 24 verse 15 says, "Therefore when you see standing in the holy place the abomination of desolation, spoken of by Daniel the prophet, let him who reads understand." Notice that phrase, "let him who reads understand." Jesus is saying that those who study the scriptures, those who know the prophecies, will be the only ones who will recognize what is happening when it happens. The majority of the world will not understand. They will see the entrance of the Antichrist into the temple as something positive, as the fulfillment of their hopes. But those who know the word of God will know that this is the signal to flee. Luke chapter 21, verse 20, gives us an additional signal. "But when you see Jerusalem surrounded by armies, then you know that her desolation has come near." Do you see the pattern here? Jerusalem surrounded by armies, the abomination of desolation in the temple, and then the command to flee. It all happens in rapid sequence, and those who are not paying attention will miss the signals. Jesus was very specific about how we are to respond. "So those of you in Judea, flee to the mountains. Let him who is on the housetop not go down to take anything out of his house. And let him who is in the field not go back to take his cloak." This is an emergency evacuation, like when there is a tsunami and the alarm sounds and people have to run immediately to higher ground without stopping for anything. Why the urgency? Because Luke chapter 21 verse 23 tells us, "Woe more to those who are pregnant and to those who are nursing infants in those days, for there will be great disaster in the land and wrath on this people." What comes after the abomination of desolation will be so terrible that those who are left will not survive. This is not a time to be brave or heroic. It is a time to obey Jesus' direct command and run to the safety that he has prepared. Revelation chapter 12 verse 6 gives us hope. "And the woman fled into the wilderness where she has a place prepared by God, that she might be kept there for 1260 days. God has a specific place prepared for those who flee when they see the sign, a place where they will be supernaturally protected and sustained during the 3.5 years of the Great Tribulation. But here's the key. This place of refuge is not for every Christian. It is specifically for those who obey Jesus' warning and flee when they see the abomination of desolation. Those who are left thinking that they can resist or can endure a little longer, they will not make it to this place of refuge. They will find themselves facing the most intense persecution the church has ever seen. Revelation chapter 13, verse 7, tells us, "And it was given him to make war with the saints and to overcome them." Brothers, the church that remains after the abomination of desolation will not be victorious, it will be defeated. That is why Jesus warned us to run, because the only victory during that time will be obedience to his warning. They are ready to recognize the sign when it appears. They are prepared to act immediately without hesitation or delay. They have a plan to obey Jesus' command when the time comes. Because when they see the Antichrist enter the temple and declare himself God, when they see the abomination of desolation set up in the holy place, that will be their final sign. There will be no second warning. There will be no time to regret not having acted. There will only be time to run to the safety that God has prepared for his own. Brothers, after all this study on the abomination of desolation and the great tribulation, We need to remember that this is not the final part of the story, because there is someone who is coming, and when he comes, everything will change completely. Revelation, chapter 19, verse 11, gives us a picture that excites me every time I read it. I read, "Then I saw heaven opened, and behold, a white horse, and he who sat on him was called Faithful and True, and in righteousness he judges and makes war." This is not the same meek and humble Jesus that we know from the Gospels. This is Jesus, the King, Jesus the Warrior, Jesus the Judge of all the earth, and he comes to end the kingdom of the Antichrist once and for all. For 3.5 years the Antichrist will have persecuted the saints. For 3.5 years he will have deceived the world by pretending to be God. For 3.5 years it will have seemed that evil had triumphed, but Jesus has other plans. Revelation chapter 19 verse 15 says, "Out of his mouth comes a sharp sword with which to strike down the nations, and he will rule them with a rod of iron. And he treads the winepress of the fierceness and wrath of Almighty God." Do you see what this means? Jesus is going to destroy all of God's enemies with the word of his mouth. He won't need human armies, he won't need modern weapons. His word will be sufficient to put an end to all rebellion. 2 Thessalonians, chapter 2, verse 8, tells us, "And then that lawless one will be revealed, whom the Lord will consume with the spirit of his mouth and destroy with the brightness of his coming." The Antichrist, who seems so powerful, who deceived the whole world, who persecuted the saints, will be destroyed simply by the presence of Jesus. All his demonic power will vanish like smoke before the glory of the King of Kings. Revelation, chapter 19, verse 20, gives us the details. "And the beast was captured, and with him the false prophet who had performed miracles before him, with which he deceived those who had received the mark of the beast and those who worshipped his image. These two were thrown alive into the lake of fire burning with brimstone." Do you see the perfect justice of God? Those who deceived the world, those who persecuted the saints, those who opposed God, will get exactly what they deserve. There will be no negotiations, no second chances, no mercy for those who rejected mercy when it was available. But for those who obeyed the warning of Jesus, for those who fled when they saw the abomination of desolation, for those who remained faithful during the tribulation, there is a glorious reward waiting. Revelation, chapter 20, verse 4, says, "And I saw thrones, and they sat on them, and judgment was given to them. And I saw the souls of those who had been beheaded because of their testimony for Jesus and because of the word of God, and who had not worshipped the beast or his image, and had not received his mark on their foreheads or on their hands. And they came to life and reigned with Christ for 1,000 years. Those who remained faithful, who rejected the mark of the beast, who chose to die rather than worship the Antichrist, will reign with Christ for 1,000 years. They will go from being persecuted to being rulers, from being victims to being overcomers. Brothers and sisters, this is the perspective we need to keep in mind. Yes, the abomination of desolation will be terrible. Yes, the Great Tribulation will be the darkest period in human history. Yes, those who remain will face persecution and suffering. But all of this is temporary. All this will pass away. Jesus is coming, and when he comes, he will establish his kingdom of righteousness and peace forever. The question each of us must ask ourselves is, will we be ready when we see the sign? Will we recognize the abomination of desolation when it appears? Will we obey Jesus' warning to run to the safety he has prepared? Because those who are prepared, who know the signs, who heed the warnings, will see not only the end of the kingdom of the Antichrist, but the establishment of the eternal kingdom of our Lord Jesus Christ. History is reaching its climax. Prophecies are being fulfilled before our eyes. The time of the abomination of desolation may be closer than we think, but so is the glorious return of the King of Kings and Lord of Lords. Come, Lord Jesus.